Hello and welcome back to the Healthcare Executive Insights Podcast. My name is Elliot Sloan with the McCallum Group. Today we are very excited to introduce our guest, Mr. Mark Boucaux. Mark is the president and CEO of Potomac Valley Hospital, as well as the president and CEO of Garrett Regional Medical Center. Mark, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Elliot, thanks for having me on board. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Let's start with sharing with us a bit about your professional background, and then we'll talk more about the hospitals you're operating.
Yeah, so I came up through hospital administration. I've been doing this all my life, and I'm blessed to lead two hospitals here for West Virginia University Health System. I have their only Maryland hospital, which is Garrett Regional Medical Center, and then I have Potomac Valley Hospital, which is in Kaiser, West Virginia. Both hospitals have significantly good quality records as well as financial performance. Both are in a rural environment, and both of those hospitals, I think, have done a good job of significantly growing their market share in the geographies that they serve, mostly by creating access to care and developing programs that the community needs, and also by having a strong focus on helping people in our communities to proactively focus and manage their own health care. So we provide a lot of programs and wraparound services for chronic disease management. Issues that we address include the social determinants of health for the patients that we serve in order to really help them along their pathway toward really maintaining health. Because I think that if we want to think about the total cost of care and what it's costing Americans today, we are on a mission to drive that total cost of care per beneficiary down by reducing episodic care and improving the overall population health of a community. So, yeah, and that's pretty much what's been happening with WVU, very mission-driven organization. And so that's where I come from in my healthcare environment. And that's sort of our focus.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot about rural hospitals and how important they are to provide access, but there's a lot of concerns with a lot of them having to close their doors because the cost of operating these hospitals have shot through the roof over the years. The cost of labor, the cost of delivering services, but the reimbursements have stayed stagnant at best. Are you concerned about the future of rural hospitals?
I am. I think across the United States today, we're seeing more and more hospitals closed. About a year or two ago, I did a study with respect to the National Rural Health Association and their data, and it demonstrated that a significant number of rural hospitals were closing every year. Yeah. And so I think that in our country, we've been driving patient care toward urban hubs and academic medical centers. And I think that makes it harder and harder for patients in rural geographies that are outside those hubs to be able to get access to care in the way that they should.
Sure.
But I also understand it's also very difficult to recruit providers for various specialties, subspecialties, even primary care to those geographies. So it's kind of a unique problem that I think we're experiencing in the world today. But yes, I'm very concerned. And I think that I happen to be blessed in that both of the hospitals that I lead are rural hospitals, but they're a little bit closer to some more larger urban areas. So Garrett Regional Medical Center is about 45 minutes from Morgantown, West Virginia, and the Kaiser Hospital or Potomac Valley Hospital is about a half hour from Cumberland, Maryland.
Sure.
So, it's a little bit more, it's not like a real urban environment, but at least there's a larger population base nearby, if that makes sense. Yeah. But,
yeah, you're able to access talent that can commute, maybe live more in the urban areas and provide patient care in the more rural areas at your hospitals.
Yeah. I'm in a unique position. Even when I, you know, even when Potomac Valley Hospital was in financial trouble, the health system that we belong to is a totally socially responsible health system in that they make the investments in the rural environment in order to keep those hospitals healthy.
Yep.
And WVU Medicine has really done a tremendous job, I think, in rescuing some hospitals that have been in significant, you know, trouble financially. Yeah. I'm blessed that Garrett Regional Medical Center, my original hospital, really was not in that position. And Potomac Valley Hospital was able to invest and reinvest because of the health system to be able to really grow into what it is here today.
Sure.
But we do recruit a lot of providers. And one of the things I would say that has really attracted the providers to this hospital is our philosophy here really isn't about margin. It's about people. And it's about what, you know, how we as an organization can really care for every patient like we would our own families. And I think that the fact that, you know, we're an organization that's focused on compassionate care and having empathy and really caring for patients, I think has created reputation in such a way that people flock to these two hospitals because of it.
Yeah, and that's probably a testament to the culture that you provide or created at these hospitals. Tell me a little bit about the importance of culture at a health system. And how does the executive leadership team impact this culture?
Yeah, so, you know, I think when I talk about our culture here, it's a unique culture for sure, especially in my two hospitals, in that what we've done is, first of all, we were early adopters of just culture policies that look at safety and quality and safety in such a way where it's not a blaming culture, but it's a culture that's a just culture that addresses latent system process failures in how we render processes of patient care. And so we know there are going to be errors in the medical field. It happens all the time. But the issue is what do we do to shock people out of unconscious competence and address human factors? So we do that. We have some red rules around that. But I think the most important thing for us in terms of building our culture is we have a mission. Our little mission statement is it just resonates with caregivers in that our mission statement really is what I said earlier, that our goal that we take care of every patient like we would our own family.
Yep.
And so, you know, when we have a patient that is elderly and doesn't have family, we care for that patient and we help that patient navigate the system in such a way that, you know, if their own family was with them. And so I think we're able to do that. And I think we've done a lot of that through having an open heart, coming at this from hospital administration, coming at it with a great sense of humility.
Sure.
In that we, you know, we empower our frontline staff we have frontline staff councils where they're empowered to make decisions that affect the work that they do. They're given budget to make some of those decisions. And those frontline staff councils are focused on quality and safety, patient experience, and employee engagement. And by doing those three things, I think what happens is that we allow them a lot of opportunity to really direct where resources go for improvement. And by giving them that empowerment, we have created a culture from the grassroots level up to really address making it a great place to work.
Yeah,
and so, you know, as an organization, we focus on safety, quality and safety. And our frontline staff councils have changed things from like where lighting is in the parking lot to where handrails are to changing order sets into the IT system to make sure that they were efficient and effective and not redundant.
Sure.
To adding safety, adding security staff in the emergency department. So I think if there's one thing I know is that I can learn a lot as a leader by listening to the people that work with me here.
Yep.
And having a true, you know, authentic respect for their opinions and their thoughts. And, you know, one of the things they were immediately interested in was healthy food for them from the cafeteria, you know, so they wanted a good salad bar. So, you know, that was like the first thing they wanted to change. And so I think that's how we as leaders, I think if we open our hearts and open our ears, that we can actually learn a lot about what's important to our staff and what we may think is important to us may not be important to them.
Sure.
And so that's how I think if you have an engaged staff, you have a happy staff. If you have a happy staff, you have happier patients.
Yep.
Right? To make sense. And then if you have happy patients, then you have something to market.
Yep.
And then if you do all that right, then I think the finances all follow.
I agree. And it's not just an engaged staff, it's an empowered staff that feel like their voice is heard. And what better than listening to the ground floor to make changes on what the patients need, what the staff needs, versus trying to figure it out from the top down. You know, I think people get into healthcare because they want to serve. There's something in them that wants to serve others. It's not just about making money and having a stable, you know, financial career. And most people in healthcare are very hardworking and very intelligent, and they could have gone in a lot of directions with their future, but they chose healthcare because they want to help patients, bottom line. Right. Now, if they can make a really good living along the way, that's great. But if you go into an organization and you're just clocking in, clocking out, you're not able to make change and impact patients' lives as much as you'd want to, then there's a void, I feel like, for a lot of these patients or staff members.
Yeah. And I think we have that. I mean, I think that's everywhere, especially nowadays. And we saw that really become more prevalent through the pandemic. And I think that's still there. That still exists. But, you know, like, for example, one of my things as a leader is to stamp out compassion fatigue. And so how do you do that? How do you keep people engaged in being compassionate?
Yeah.
So, you know, we are probably a super early adopter around flexible schedules. We're a very early adopter around 4-day work weeks. And so we've listened to our employees because I think people want lifestyle.
Yep.
People want lifestyle improvements in their employment. And so I think that to really become an employer of choice, you have to really listen to what people are wanting these days.
Yeah.
And you know, gone are the days when people want to work to hurt their life away and work 24/7, 365. And you know, we're just not a society of workaholics the way maybe some of our parents were. And so I think that, you know, it's a different world today, and we have to be flexible and grow with what people are looking for.
Yep.
But most of all, I think people want a voice.
Yep.
They want to know that they matter. They want to know that they're cared about in an authentic way.
Sure. And you know what else has changed from our previous decades or generations is now patients have a choice of where to get their healthcare services rendered. It used to be your family medicine or your primary care provider told you to go see this doctor, and you did. And that was it. But now people have the power of the internet in their hands. They're going to do research. They're going to want to hear from other patients who've had good or maybe not so great experiences. And now patients have a lot more of a decision-making process than in previous years. So now health systems really have to be so patient-focused, or else, you know, the patients will find somewhere else to go.
Yeah, this is true. And I think one of the things that we're seeing is the fact that, you know, if you think about it, Right. If I'm really going to be patient focused, then and I'm really going to be authentic about that, then I'm not going to allow inefficient care practices in the hospital. And I'm going to seek out the providers who can do it. For example, if we have long wait times in the emergency department, that means that I'm really, as the leader, I'm not listening to what patients want. They want convenience. They want to be able to be served quickly and efficiently.
Yep.
And if I don't have the means to do that in my own hospital, then I sure better figure out a way to make it happen. And I think that we've been able to do that. Correct. And, you know, so I know that, you know, just by the fact that we, like, when I first got to my one hospital, Potomac Valley Hospital, 5 years ago, you know, the wait time at the hospital was 6 hours, could be like 6 hours in the ED before you got taken care of.
Wow.
And we, through performance improvement and Lean Six Sigma and looking at process improvements, my door to doc time now is like less than 10 minutes.
Wow.
And the door to room time is like five, you know, so it's, you know, and I say less than 10 minutes, I really mean it. It takes like 6 minutes to get in to see a doctor in my emergency department.
That is incredible.
But that's a great example, I think, of having humility.
Sure.
To say, I don't have all the right answers on my own. I'm going to listen to what patients want. And then I'm going to execute as the leader of the organization to do what it is that patients really want to be what they want us to be.
Sure.
And so, you know, I say that not from a bragging perspective around the data. I say it more from a serving perspective of, if this was my mom, what would I want to have happen?
Sure.
You know,
and that's your mission.
Yeah, so that's really what I think what we strive toward. And then that follows all the way around through all the quality. So if I'm going to treat a patient like family, I have to look at the management of the entire facility as if any single time any one of those patients that comes in could be a member of my own family. What would I make sure happens for every single one of them?
Sure.
And I think that is my driver, I think, has created culture where we have humble, serving people who have followed their calling, as you were alluding to earlier, why we get into healthcare. They followed their calling in order to, and we give them that dream.
Yeah.
You know, so we give the dream to the doctors that work with us. The calling is free in that we take care of all the back office stuff. We allow them to practice in true form. We hire people that have answered their calling to care for other people.
Yep. And you've created the ecosystem.
We're very careful about who we hire. So, yeah, it took a little while to assemble a medical staff of, you know, 300-400 doctors that are on site between the two places that are all about, you know, checking their ego at the door.
Yep.
They're all about care. They're humble, they're sweet, and they're kind. And so
symbiotic.
That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that takes time.
You know, kudos to you and your team for building that ecosystem and building that symbiotic mission and relationship between all of your staff. It can get challenging when you have a lot of providers. Sometimes that comes with egos.
Yes.
So I can definitely feel your pains with what you've had to go through to get to where you are today, which is some of the clients we've worked with that are rapidly growing large organizations that need to find a way to balance that talent versus compatibility with the team.
Yeah, exactly. Or even talent versus ability to put yourself second to the patients.
Sure, sure. Of course, that's got to be rule number one, right? So, Mark, let's move into another topic that we talk about a lot on this podcast, which is we know the healthcare system has a lot of nuances, challenges, and, you know, in many cases needs a lot of hands on deck to look at how do we fix this system as a whole. In your opinion, what are the most pressing issues for health systems going into 2024?
Well, you know, I think that many of us are struggling financially with the challenges. Mostly, you know, one of the things that I think really comes to the front of my mind is the cost of pharmaceuticals. The fact that there's so much direct to consumer marketing for the pharmaceutical industry, people are expecting miracle drugs that are extremely expensive, that solve problems immediately. And I think that, you know, we as a society have come to looking, you know, we're looking for miracle cures.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, there's that to me seems to be a significant challenge considering the drug shortages that also are happening throughout the industry today. I think, and then I think that all of that is compounded by the fact that insurance providers have become more and more complex in what they allow and how they authorize for procedures and try to control costs from that side. So I think one of the things WVU is doing well is creating the sort of vertical integration between provider and payer so that, you know, we then benefit by the fact that we're addressing population health and creating ways to care for people even in an organic way, more toward being proactive about managing their own health. But I think if I really looked at the challenges, I think that there's that, and there's just a complete, you know, the other side of this is just a complete shortage of workers and a complete shortage of people going into the field of healthcare. I think people are desiring things that are easier, that are less, that are more lifestyle, which is why I'm saying, you know, we have worked toward, you know, making these better lifestyle choices for these positions that we have. But I think a lot of people are people want to enjoy their lives these days. And I think, you know, I also think it's a little weird. This might be a little twist for you, but I think that the thought that the effect that social media has had on society is that the kids, our kids and people, even, you know, our age, whatever, are coming up seeing other people's best life projected on a social media platform all the time. And so we come to expect the best of everything all the time. And when we don't get it, we're very disappointed and concerned. And so What is that for people? Because it creates a false sense of expectations about what's real and what isn't real in terms of employment.
Yep.
And then, you know, I think back to the drug thing, I think that regulatory requirements around the pharmaceutical industry, which may not be a popular conversation. We didn't talk about that before this podcast, but, you know, it is a real problem.
Yeah, no, I agree across the board with a lot of these concerns that you have, you know, starting with the pharmaceutical piece. The pharma industry has had record gains year over year. Same with the insurance industry, and the payers have had record gains year over year. So why are the ones actually delivering the services, the providers and the staff, getting chopped in the knees when these other organizations are just scaling at a massive rate? Why are the reimbursements for Medicare, Medicaid, or even commercial insurance going down or staying stagnant if these companies are making more and more money? Right. You know, it just seems like we're getting so lopsided that someone needs to raise the flag and say, wait, guys, let's be fair. Like, let's be fair and take care of patients. And I think you're 100% right with this new perspective of life due to social media as one of the influences. But I think there's a lot of false hopes out there, whether it's what this drug can do for you or what you should expect from life. You know, I think there's a bit of a blinders on of the harsh reality that life can be challenging, and you got to accept that, right? And there's not always going to be a quick cure, and there's you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. So I think it's a very unique perspective that you're bringing to the table of you know, why our health system is maybe on a verge of what do we need to do to restructure this, and how do we look at it completely differently. So I appreciate that insight.
Well, thank you. You know, I think, you know, the one hospital in Maryland does operate under a global budget payment model, which is completely unique.
Sure.
Maryland is the largest alternative payment model system in the United States today. So the entire state of Maryland operates their hospitals on a global budget.
Sure.
Meaning that you get paid a capped amount each year. And the goal is that you use whatever that capped amount is to care for your patient population.
Sure.
And in some ways it's challenging, but in other ways it's also liberating, in that you get away from episodic care and start probably more addressing more holistic care for the person, you know, so it's more whole person centered care. And I do think that there's unique challenges that we have ahead of us as a nation around addressing total cost of care. And you're starting to see more states try to experiment with global budget payment models. Now, I don't know that that may be the best, but I do know what we're doing in West Virginia with the WVU health system. By vertically integrating the payer-provider model, we are able to achieve significant reductions in the total cost of care in that model as well. So I think that I'm watching two different, completely different models unfold in front of me,
sure.
Two states, two payment models. I happen to be somebody in a rural hospital in both of those payment models, so it's a unique position to be in.
Sure.
So yeah, it's an interesting time that we're facing, and where we're going as a nation around healthcare. But you know, the one thing that we don't really address is big pharma, and
yeah.
As a nation, I think that, you know, there needs to be restrictions around lobbying, and
yeah.
These are things that people don't like to talk about, and they become inflammatory. And so I certainly don't mean to create controversy on the podcast today, but you know,
we welcome it.
Okay, there you go. But it's kind of real. I mean, it's a real scenario that it exists today.
I think healthcare, I heard, is going to make up 23% of our GDP. How is that? It's insane.
Yeah, it is.
It's a big problem, and drugs are a big part of that allocation of resources.
Right. You know, back to something we were talking about a little earlier too. In the rural environment, you got to realize a hospital that's successful in a small community can change the entire community economically.
Yeah.
You know, so as we changed our hospital here, you know, I had to borrow $4.5 million when I first started to make payroll. I borrowed $4.5 million from the health system to make payroll. We had 0.3 days cash on hand. And we invested in hiring physicians and in creating services for the community. And then here we are five years later. And, you know, we've paid that money back and we've become successful in our own right. But I think that the thing is, by creating the jobs in the community, we have created, you know, economic growth in this town, where, you know, there you see the buildings in the community starting to come up, being remodeled, people moving into the area. You know, if we created 150 jobs in the first 3 years I was here.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think the reason I bring that up is not to pat my own back or anything like that. What I'm saying is, as a nation, we need to make sure we preserve the healthcare system in the rural environment. That and schools are the two most important things. And, you know, the school system is really struggling in many rural communities today. Yep. To be able to function. And so, you know, I think that between education and healthcare, that's what creates healthy communities and healthy environments. And we need to make those investments where we need to. But you're right. I mean, we're going to need to do something pretty dramatic as a nation to address this. But the problem is that we throw solutions out that are temporal and sometimes don't address the bigger problems that are underneath the surface. So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And one of our goals with this podcast is to get enough folks like yourself on the podcast and to create a relationship. So maybe one day in about a year from now, once we have worked with hundreds of executives from different organizations across the country, we'll bring everyone together onto a Zoom conference meeting call and talk about what we can do with all hands on deck, right? I think it needs to be a grassroots movement of change. It's not going to happen from the top down, unfortunately. I don't believe it. I think it's got to be from the bottom up.
That's usually the case when to create real change. That's usually, I think generally that's what happens. I agree with you.
Well, Mark, we really appreciate your time and all the experiences and insights you've shared with us. Kudos to all the great work you're doing with the WVU medicine hospitals that you're running. And I couldn't agree more with the philosophy and the mission that you guys are on, which is treat every person like family and empower your staff to have a voice. If you can master those two things, the finances will fall in place.
And that's what we've seen here.
That's wonderful, Mark. We will certainly be in touch, and maybe we'll bring you back on in a few months to hear some updates with WVU Medicine.
Sounds good. Thank you.
You have a terrific day.
Yeah, you too.